President Bush says the nation is facing the most serious energy shortage since the 1970s. NPR's Kathleen Schalk has this report on how that crisis unfolded, how the government responded, and why it's hard to make energy policy stick.
Energy policy analysts like Richard Hirsch of Virginia Tech University see a pattern over the years. He says the American public has certain expectations.
Because if you read your Constitution carefully, you will see that Americans are entitled to cheap gasoline.
But Americans have a limited appetite for energy policy.
When energy is cheap, no one really pays much attention to it, and government policy languishes.
So it was in the period between World War II and the 1970s. Electricity was cheap and plentiful, and so was gasoline. Commercials like this one touted the appeal of the open road.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call.
U.S. consumption soared in those years. Soon, one-seventh of the entire world's oil supply was being burned up as fuel on America's highways. Domestic oil reserves were dwindling by the late 1960s, but the U.S. could still import oil cheap.
We could get oil in 1970 for something like $1.50 a barrel, not a gallon, a barrel, from Saudi Arabia, shipped to the United States.
Then came the Yom Kippur War. Egypt and Syria attacked Israel, and the oil-producing nations in the Middle East unsheathed what they called the oil weapon. They agreed to cut production and ban exports to the U.S. President Richard Nixon issued this warning to the nation.
By the end of this month, more than 2 million barrels a day of oil we expected to import into the United States will no longer be available. We must therefore face up to a very stark fact. We are heading toward the most acute shortages of energy since World War II.
The oil embargo came as a rude shock. At the time, many Americans had no idea the nation even imported oil. Prices exploded. Gas jumped from 25 cents a gallon to 75 and eventually reached a dollar. The stock market and the economy slumped, and analysts predicted a grim future of permanent shortages. President Nixon unveiled a new program called Project Independence. He said if America could send a man to the moon, it could wean itself from foreign sources of energy. President Gerald Ford took up this theme as well. His administration called for hundreds of new nuclear and coal-fired power plants. But neither Republican administration was able to push through a plan. It fell to President Jimmy Carter, who made energy policy his top priority. Soon after taking office, he put on a cardigan and spoke to the nation.
Our decision about energy will test the character of the American people and the ability of the President and the Congress to govern this nation. This difficult effort will be the moral equivalent of war, except that we will be uniting our efforts to build and not to destroy.
Carter argued that conservation was the best solution to the shortage.
It's the cheapest, most practical way to meet our energy needs and to reduce our growing dependence on foreign supplies of oil.
And Carter insisted that the nation could save energy without sacrificing economic growth. But few believed it at the time. Again, Richard Hirsch.
There were government studies performed in 1975 that forecast that the amount of energy needed for each dollar of GNP would remain constant for many years to come.
But in fact, Hirsch says, the energy needed to produce each dollar of gross national product has fallen by a third since then. Fuel efficiency standards set in 1975 had a huge impact. In a decade, the average gas mileage of American cars climbed from 13 miles per gallon to 27.5. John Holdren of Harvard's Kennedy School says government programs also led to more efficient appliances and buildings.
If you ask how much energy was actually saved by all of these improvements, it amounts to far more energy than was added by expansion in all U.S. sources of energy supply combined. That is, if you look at the growth of oil, natural gas, coal, nuclear energy, hydropower, and renewables over the same period, conservation saved much more energy than expansion of sources provided.
One ambitious effort to boost supply yielded almost nothing. It was the SynFuels program, which aimed to squeeze liquid fuel out of coal and oil shale. Synthetic fuel ended up costing upwards of $60 a barrel and lost its appeal when the price of crude began falling. Again, John Holdren.
Suddenly, no one was interested anymore in $60 or $70 a barrel oil. So the insight was, yeah, we could be energy independent, But being energy independent would entail us paying twice as much for some of our oil as we need to.
More conventional approaches had a bigger impact. Congress approved the Alaska Pipeline in 1975, and that helped the supply of oil on the world market catch up with the demand. Phasing out price controls also made a difference. Daniel Yergin is president of Cambridge Energy Research Associates and author of The Prize, A History of Oil and Politics.
The ironic thing is that price controls on fuels, particularly on oil, had started with the Nixon administration. And the Carter administration, Democratic administration, was the administration that tried to undo these controls. And it was a terribly bitter fight. It was Democrats against Democrats.
Yergin says under President Ronald Reagan, the government stopped regulating prices altogether.
Demand went down because of price, because of conservation. New supplies came into the system. Instead of just depending on a few countries in OPEC, you had the development of the North Sea. You had non-OPEC oil developed around the world. And we went within the second oil shock crisis was at the end of the 1970s when the Shah of Iran lost his job and the Iranian Revolution. Within 5-6 years, there was a tremendous glut of oil in the world market, and the price of oil collapsed. And it tells you how powerful markets can be in terms of responding. And I think people didn't believe that in the 1970s. They really thought that we were in a permanent shortage.
When the crisis passed, people lost interest. Energy policy came to the fore again briefly after Iraq invaded Kuwait. Later, the Clinton administration came in and increased spending on fuel efficiency and new technology, but not by much, according to John Holdren.
In 2001, we're only spending something like a quarter as much money on energy R&D as we were spending in 1978.
And as long as energy prices were low, no one really worried about it. After the Asian economic crisis, crude oil prices plummeted to $10 a barrel. Consumption surged, production and exploration tapered off, and when demand roared back, suppliers were caught short. And so prices are up again, and energy policy is back. Kathleen Schalk, NPR News, Washington.